This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. We have a very full episode for you this week, but we would like to begin by reminding you that the views of guests and hosts of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And as September is National Preparedness Month, it's a good time for horse owners to make sure that they have plans for their horses should disaster strike. And this week we're going to be focusing on dealing with natural disasters. Extreme weather events are becoming more common. Horses and other animals depend on their owners or caretakers to keep them safe. Dr. Michelle Frazier from the Haggard Equine Medical Institute will be here to tell us how to prepare for the most common natural disasters. And we'll also hear from Mark Coley from the US Equestrian, who will be telling us about the USEF's Equine Disaster Relief Fund, how that works and how you can benefit if you are in need. As wildfires rage across Oregon and Montana, among other states, thousands are evacuating with horses in tow. Houston is still dealing with the aftermaths of Harvey, and hundreds of horses were evacuated from Florida and Georgia in preparation for Hurricane Irma last week in Florida. We begin with the USDF Senior Education Coordinator Sharon Van Der Zeel in conversation with Dr. Michelle Frazier with advice for what horse owners need to do about dealing with extreme weather disasters.
Welcome, Dr. Frazier. Thank you for taking the time to talk to our listeners. With all the extreme weather the country is experiencing, including fire, floods, hurricanes, and tornadoes, I think all horse owners are becoming aware of how important it is to have a disaster plan in place.
Thank you for having me this morning. It's nice to be here.
What are the most important steps owners should take to be prepared to evacuate their horses and other farm animals?
I think the most important thing when there is a potential natural disaster coming is to be aware of the situation. Be very vigilant about listening to the news, watching weather, listening to the local authorities, and certainly heeding their advice when there is an evacuation order. If you plan to evacuate, you want to make sure that you leave early enough. You don't certainly want to be stuck on a road or an interstate in dangerous winds or in a traffic jam. The recommendations are to leave at least 48 hours prior to predictions of wind gusts exceeding 40 miles per hour. You don't want to be out on the road if the wind gusts with the horse trailer are greater than 40 miles an hour.
What are the most important items to have ready to take or to send with the horses when you're evacuating?
Some of the most important things to take with you would be feed and water for the animals. Certainly feed and water if possible. Water can be stored in plastic garbage bags and then put into trash cans. It's recommended to have at least 12 to 20 gallons of water per day stored for horses, for each individual horse when there's a potential disaster like a hurricane coming. Horses should be current on their vaccination, particularly their tetanus. They should have a negative Coggins, and they should have a health certificate. So making sure you have all the proper paperwork to document these things is excellent to have that with you when you're potentially evacuating. You want to make sure that each horse is identified, and that can certainly be harder than it sounds. There's several different ways to try to identify horses. I would certainly recommend doing multiple ways in case one of them fails. Each horse should have a leather halter with identifying information on it, name and address of the owner. This information can be put in a plastic Ziploc bag and taped on the halter with duct tape. Some people recommend using a waterproof luggage tag and then braiding that into the horse's mane or tail. You want to make sure that that tag is waterproof. Maybe even put one in the mane and one in the tail in case one comes out. Some other recommendations for identifying the horse would be painting the identifying information, the owner's name, phone number, or address on the horse. Some people have even body clipped this information into the horse. If they have a long enough hair coat, that can be seen to actually clip the phone number onto the horse. And I think the more ways you can potentially identify these horses, the better.
I know this is more in advance, but as far as like microchipping, I know a lot of people have that for their breed registrations.
That's excellent. Microchipping is certainly a good way to do that. Obviously, you have to have the little reader to have that information. So I would think even if you have your horse microchipped, you want to have potentially something else on them too, so someone can see it at a quick glance in case they don't have access to the reader for the microchip.
And that's a very good point. If you board your horse, are there different concerns or steps that would need to be taken?
I think if you board your horse, you want to make sure that you're working with the owner of that stable and that everybody's on the same page and getting a disaster plan ready, be it evacuating or opting to stay on the premises, helping the owners of the place survey the property and make sure that barns, fences, whatever can be done to make it a safer area before the disaster approaches is an excellent plan.
If you're unable to evacuate some or all of your livestock for any reason, is there any research that answers the questions of whether to turn the horses loose or keep them enclosed in the barn or in a paddock in some way?
That is a really hard question, and I wish there was an easy answer to it. There's many different opinions, and there's many different circumstances as to which is the better answer. Each person is going to have to look at their individual scenario, their individual farm, and decide what's best for them. You don't want to leave horses out in electric fences or barbed wire fences. You don't want to leave the horses out in fields with trees that may be easily uprooted and could potentially fall on a horse. On the other hand, leaving a horse in a barn has the potential of flooding and the potential of the barn actually collapsing and trapping the animal. Generally speaking, people opt to leave their horses outside if it is a safe area, a safe field, so that they're not potentially trapped in the barn. But again, each individual farm has to look at their scenario and decide what's going to be the safer for the animals.
So if you're staying, are there items that you want to make sure that you have on hand if you feel like maybe there won't be any electricity or you may be stuck in your home for a few days?
Certainly a generator is ideal. If it's possible to have that, that would be good. Feed, water for several days. Basic first aid medications for your horse should be kept also.
So are there any tips that you have that maybe you could use to disinfect water if you're in an area that you weren't sure the water was safe?
Yes, and this is certainly something to keep in your list, whether you evacuate or whether you do opt to stay in an area that has a natural disaster coming, is to keep chlorine bleach. You can use 2 drops of chlorine bleach per quart of water and let that stand for 30 minutes. That will help decontaminate water that may have contamination in it. Either way, you want to make sure those animals are identified in case they are out of their enclosure when the storm or whatever disaster passes.
Thank you. That's good advice. What advice do you have for barns that may be accepting evacuated horses?
I commend all the farms that are taking in the horses that have evacuated from the different areas. That is quite an undertaking, and that I certainly respect them for doing that and showing their compassion. These farms need to make sure that they're equipped with food and water, hay. They need to isolate these horses as best they can. You want to avoid turning out large groups of horses together. Ideally, these horses need to go into individual stalls and not share water buckets or feed buckets, and limit the exposure between horses as much as is physically possible. These horses are going to be stressed. They're going to be coming from different farms, different environments. So obviously it's setting up a situation for potential infectious disease. So making sure that horses that are accepted are current on vaccines and isolating them, watching for any signs of sickness will help prevent this.
So how do you as vets prepare for weather-related disasters?
Certainly, just like an owner, we need to be vigilant, listen to the news, listen to local authorities, and be aware when a situation may be occurring so that we get prepared ahead of time as well. We want to make sure that we have any medications that we may need and are prepared to treat whatever incidents may arise in these situations.
So let's talk a little bit about after the disaster. So what are some of the signs that horse owners need to watch out for if their animals have been in a flood or a fire or other extreme weather conditions?
Owners need to pay very close attention to their horses and not just immediately after the disaster, but for several days, even weeks, because lesions may not initially show up. Some obvious things to look for would be cuts, lacerations, a horse that's not acting like it normally does, a horse that's very quiet, horse that's potentially off feed. These are some early signs to look for. Rectal temperature should be measured on the horse at least once or twice a day to monitor for any fevers that could be an early sign of infection. The horse needs to be examined for any swelling, particularly on their lower limbs, or any mild wound. It's important to remember that even small scratches that seem like they're no big deal can actually turn into something significant, especially if the animal's been standing in flood water that could be contaminated. So early intervention and early aggressive treatment of any skin wounds, be it even a small scratch or a small swelling, is essential for preventing further injury that could be more detrimental to the animal.
What about in the case of fires?
In a fire, two of the things we're most worried about are obviously the initial damage to the skin from the fire. And that's more obvious sometimes than the second thing, which is damage to the lungs. And that may not show up for 24, 48 hours after the exposure. So monitoring the animal for any signs of change in behavior, change in their membrane or their gum color can be early signs. Also, these horses are very prone to lung damage, so early intervention with antibiotics, anti-inflammatories may be warranted, and that's something you would want to get with your local veterinarian to establish a plan. But again, early intervention to treat for that potential lung damage is essential.
Thank you. That was really great information. Are there three things that would maybe be just three quick take-homes for our listeners in regards to being prepared for weather-related disasters?
I think the first thing is to have a plan in place. Know what you're going to do, know where you're going to go, how you're going to get there, and be ready ahead of time. The second thing I would say is if you have made the plan to evacuate, leave early. Don't wait. Leave as soon as you possibly can so you avoid traffic, you avoid wind, that sort of thing. The third thing is to have a checklist of the items you're going to need, and that's certainly if you evacuate or if you opt to stay. There's several online websites that have good checklists of things that you want to make sure you have. One of those is the AEP. The AVMA also has a website with some of these things.
Okay, great. And I'll put links to those in our show notes. So thanks again, Dr. Frazier, for joining us today. We really appreciate it. I hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you so much.
And if you'd like to learn more about equine emergency rescues, please join us for the Haggard Emergency Response Team presentation at the 2017 Adequine USDF Annual Convention, which takes place this year in Lexington, Kentucky. And now we're going to hear about the USEF's Equine Disaster Relief Fund, which has raised over $400,000 in donations, grants, and pledges, with 100% of those funds slated to boost relief efforts by the Houston SPCA, Texas A&M University, the Texas Equine Veterinary Association, and other equine rescue organizations. All this as horse people have united to help in the efforts following the Category 4 hurricane that made landfall in Texas just over a week ago. Well, joining me now is Mark Coley, who is Director of Membership and Eventing at US Equestrian, to talk about the USEF's Equine Disaster Relief Fund. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it certainly has been a busy time in recent weeks, of course, with what's been happening in Texas with all the flooding, and now, of course, with Hurricane Irma in Florida. So why don't you begin, Mark, by explaining what the fund actually does and how it distributes the funds and how it works with local organizations to support those in need during a disaster?
Absolutely. Yeah, the USEF Equine Disaster Relief Fund, it actually was developed back in 2005 after the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. And there was a need for an organization to sort of step up. And a lot of people want to give when there is a disaster, and specifically to help the horses that are impacted. And so that's what the USEF Equine Disaster Relief Fund does. We're based here in Lexington, Kentucky at the Kentucky Horse Park. And so we're not actually on the grounds when a disaster does hit. So what we do is we work with local organizations, rescues, SPCA, disaster groups that are responding to the disaster, identify who those groups are, identify what the needs are, and work with them to get them funding through donations that come into the Disaster Relief Fund. 100% of the money that is donated to the Disaster Relief Fund does go to help those horses that are impacted. And with the current hurricanes, we've identified some great partners, and so we work very closely with them on what the needs are, what's going on down as they're impacted, and different ways that we're able to help support the efforts that they're putting forward.
Now, you do really work with those in the trenches, such as the humane societies and the rescue groups, vet schools even, and the hospitals too. How does that work? What are the logistics of that liaison, Mark?
Absolutely. So with Hurricane Harvey, we were starting to see the devastation that was going on down in the Houston and surrounding Texas areas, just started to reach out to different groups, and we've partnered and we work alongside some other organizations, one of them being the American Association of Equine Practitioners, the AAEP. And through their contacts, the vets on the ground, they were able to help get us information about where shelters are being set up, where vets are taking horses that need medical treatment, and start to sort of build a little bit of those relationships that way, and then start to identify on the ground who are those key organizations that are helping lead the efforts. There's so many that help in times of need, and for us to be able to have that relationship with those leaders, then we just stay in constant communication. The fund is set up so that we can give financial support. That is the primary way that we help. There have been a lot of people that have reached out, and it's a bit more challenging, especially in times when the full scope of the disaster isn't even known. But having those connections, we did have groups that wanted to take truckloads of hay or supplies down there, and we were able to work with those organizations to figure out the best way to handle that and where to take the supplies so that they were used and that those who actually needed them received them in a timely manner and that they could be best utilized.
So, for example, when people donate to you, they provide you with their donation. And then how do you decide how you allocate those funds? So if someone was to be listening here and they wanted to donate, and how would they know then, Mark, how those funds are being allocated?
So with these couple hurricanes specifically, we were sending out press releases updating the amounts that we were receiving and where the money was going, what those organizations were. Now, as generally the fund, we do have money in our reserves that we can use if it isn't as catastrophic as the hurricanes we just had, that we can still go and support other organizations. Right now, there are wildfires going on. We're keeping a close eye on what needs may be out there. And so it's our team here with our CEO, Chief Marketing Officer, as well as some others that are out in the field, that we sort of assess what the need is, really work with the veterinarians and work with the professionals that are down there to understand what the scope of everything is. There's going to be a long road ahead for many of these horses. And so we're working with now the groups that have horses that are maybe displaced and their owners can't take them back to make sure they have finances going forward that they can continue to home these horses and get them adequate feed, shelter, until they're able to either rehome them or get them back to their owners.
And if you were an organization, maybe a rescue group, a humane society listening to this, Mark, how would they be able to access these funds if they felt there was a need in their area?
They can contact the U.S. Equestrian Federation. If they call into our call center, and I can give the phone number, it's 859-258-2472. That's for our customer care department, and they'll be able to talk to them a bit more about the USEF Disaster Relief Fund. And if they do have a need, they can submit that to us for us to review. I will say just because we are not on the ground and able to assess individual situations, we do give to organizations. So if it is a rescue organization or a group like that, definitely we're happy to look at those. Unfortunately, just because we do want to make sure that the donor's money gets in the right hands and we don't have the ability to necessarily vet and check all the individual cases of a personal farm or horses individually that were impacted, we do rely on those groups to help ensure that the money gets to help as many horses as possible.
Absolutely. So you really are working with so many different organizations, especially now, as you say, around the country. And this is ongoing. I mean, obviously, it's a disaster relief fund, Mark, but you're there, you know, 24/7, you know, 12 months a year, not just during the worst of those disasters.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our disaster relief fund, we in times when there isn't, fortunately, a disaster really going on in the country, we're still collecting money so that we can provide that there are some groups, especially after some of these larger disasters, groups that come out and they start to work on education and they start to work on helping people understand how to prepare if there is something that is to impact their area. So funds can be used for those, as well as to have those reserves that we don't have to wait for the disaster to hit and donations to come in. We have funds available that as soon as they're needed, we can go out and support groups that are out trying to rescue the horses if it's a situation that they need to do that, or if it's providing medical care and getting them the supplies that they need.
Is there anything else, Mark, that you would like our listeners to know about the fund?
I would just say that one of the big things is to stress with these hurricanes, as well as so many of the other disasters that happen, how long the impact it goes on. I know that there's a great outpouring of support right after a lot of these disasters. And the generosity, really, when we can give for a duration of time, that's really, it helps with making sure that they have the funds needed to take care of these horses. We were very, very blessed with how many people have reached out and donated and provided support and said that they would like to volunteer if they can. And we're a long way from the impact of these disasters being over.
For sure. And of course, we can find out more information by going to the website as well, usequestrian.org. Mark Coley, Director of Membership and Events at US Equestrian, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come on the program and telling us about the USEF's Equine Disaster Relief Fund. Appreciate your time, Mark.
Thank you very much.
And we'll have a link in our show notes accompanying this episode to the USEF's Equine Disaster Relief Fund if you would like to donate. And in our final segment now, to offer more information about disaster preparedness, we have excerpts from a lecture that was recorded at the 2013 Annual Convention on Dealing with Equine Emergencies. The presenter is Dr. Laura Werner from Haggard Equine Medical Institute.
Today we're going to speak about emergencies in the horse. And just a couple of the goals today are to recognize when there is a problem. So we're going to go over some basic physical exam findings. So when we know, we can recognize whether something's normal or abnormal in the horse, and then what to do about it. So first of all, obviously, my important thing is try to stay calm. I think everyone, the best you can remain calm and kind of help your veterinarian or the others around you will actually help the horse in the long run as well, too, and our job as well. Try to be prepared. So we'll talk about some things to have on hand for emergencies, especially if you are a barn owner or trainer where you have a lot of horses in your care. I think one of the most important things is having access to a trailer. A lot of times, people don't have a range to have their own trailer, and so they'd have to wait and scramble to find a friend that could haul them, and that can waste a lot of valuable time. So, you know, if you don't own your own trailer, try to have something pre-arranged with a friend that you can borrow or have a friend that will haul your horse. And again, I think boarders and trainers, especially when you have a lot of horses at your facility, try to discuss treatment options or any financial limits with your owners or boarders. Obtain any permission for treatment if they're unavailable, as emergencies always seem to occur with horses when either the owner or someone else associated with the horse is out of town. It's happened to me too. So, and obviously have every horse that your facility have their insurance information available, obviously before the need arises. So just, we're gonna go over a few normals. The normal rectal temperature on a horse is 99 to 101 degrees. So foals, generally up to about 6 months of age can range from about 101.5 to 102 degrees, and that's normal for them. But an adult anywhere above 101 is considered abnormal. And that's indication of some sort of inflammation or infection when you have an elevated temperature. When it's below 98 degrees, obviously, if we have extreme cold, it can get temperature low. But obviously, that can be also associated if the horse is in severe shock, or sometimes if they've had recent bute or Bantamine administration. The only other time the horse's temp can be that low as well, too, is sometimes if they've just defecated right beforehand and they have some air in their rectum. Obviously, it's a good idea to have on hand any of those digital thermometers. They're great. Some of them are fast. I think they'll take the temperature within 8 seconds. Just need to make sure that they're pushed in fully because they're more meant for humans, but they still work really well on our equine patients. And then usually at the drugstore, you can purchase a really inexpensive stethoscope, and that's a useful item to have on hand too. So you can listen to the horse's pulse or heart rate, obviously. And if you don't have a stethoscope, you can use your hands most oftentimes enough, unless they're a very large horse, you can feel their heart rate over the left side of their chest, just right behind their elbow. And sometimes you have to tuck your hand even right behind their elbow to feel their heart or listen to it. You can also feel their pulse under their mandible. They've got a very large vessel there. You can feel another vessel for their pulse on the outside of the eye. And another great place to take the pulse is right over their sesamoids, and we often call that a digital pulse. So right over their sesamoids, right behind their fetlock, is a great place to feel their pulse as well. So the rate, adults are generally 30 to 40 beats per minute. Foals may be 80 to 100 beats per minute. So if the rate is increased, obviously, is it from excitement? A lot of times you'll listen to the horse's heart and you'll hear the heart rate just decrease within the first 10 to 15 seconds of you listening to it. A lot of times they're just like us. They don't like a cold stethoscope placed on them, or they're a little frightened with what a veterinarian is going to do, or like I said, they just associate that with a little bit of something excitement. Or is it increased because of pain or shock? So then our other important parameter is our gastrointestinal sounds. And we generally listen to these over the right and left flank areas in the upper and lower quadrants of their abdomen. We call the sounds borborygmus. That's kind of our big word for the day. They should have regular sounds. So when you listen to their gut sounds, you should hear very regular sounds occurring every few seconds. On the right side, it may be a little slower, but again, should be regular gut sounds that you hear. And a lot of times, again, if you don't have a stethoscope, you can place your ear next to the horse's abdomen and listen for those sounds. The right side can be a little slower, but they should be present. And again, knowing what's normal with your horse and what's abnormal with your horse is always good to know. So you can practice doing it before you need to know, and that way you know what's normal for that your particular horse. So any absence of the gut sounds, or if they're hypermodal, is abnormal. So if you hear almost constant GI sounds, that can be abnormal as well. And so mucous membrane color, the gums are easiest to evaluate on the horse. And what you want to do is press your finger against the gums until you can see the gums around them blanch. And then you take away your finger and count how many seconds it takes to return to that color, and that's called capillary refill time. So in a normal horse, after the blanching, the color should return in less than 2 seconds. Another abnormal color is pale or white, and that obviously is indicative of either some sort of shock or blood loss in a horse. The respiratory rate should be around 12 to 20 breaths per minute. Again, you can listen to if you have a stethoscope, you can also just count the excursions of their flanks or chest. You can listen over their trachea on the bottom of their neck, or just feel over their nostrils to see if there's airflow coming from their nostrils. Again, the rate should be about 12 to 20 breaths per minute. If it's increased, oftentimes horses will have an increased respiratory rate with pain before they'll have an increased heart rate. The other thing, obviously, is excitement, or if they've just been exercising, if there's any increased effort. So does that horse look like it's struggling to breathe, or do you not feel air coming out of their nostrils? These are all abnormal signs. So next, trauma and lacerations, what to have on hand. I recommend the cotton or the sheet cotton bandaging, okay, and several rolls of those, an elastic bandage such as Elasticon and or Vet Wrap, okay, that's stretchy material that can put pressure on the horse, and the Elasticon is good because it can stick to the horse's skin or hair, tape, or duct tape. Obviously, we can fix a lot of things with duct tape. Those are really important as well, too, when it comes to bandaging, especially in the foot area. I'd recommend some antiseptic soap, such as betadine soap. And a twitch is always a good thing to have on hand, too. Sometimes these horses, obviously, when they're in pain, they react out. And so sometimes a twitch, if you don't have sedation or access to sedation, or sometimes it's better to not administer it, you know, again, without your veterinarian directing you or seeing it when these cases. But a twitch is a great thing to have on hand to use to restrain the horse. And in a pinch, it can also be used as a splint, too. So some of those long twitches like we have are actually pretty handy. Okay. Trauma and lacerations. So we want to evaluate hemorrhage. Okay. I always try to have your client describe how fast, how many drops per second. Is there a grapefruit size or a watermelon size pool on the ground? This will help. Horses obviously are a lot larger than us. They can lose a lot of blood, but hemorrhage is serious, but we don't need to overreact, because again, they can lose a lot more blood than us. And also when they're excited, their blood pressures increase and they'll just often use more blood. So, and then you want to describe too, what structures are involved. So is it around the fetlock joint? Is there a tendon sheath? Is it near one of the tendon sheaths? Is there exposed bones? Again, what to do. So if it's over a joint, a tendon sheath, or there's bone exposed, or there's a puncture in the foot, call your vet immediately. You want to gently clean around the wounds, or apply a bandage if possible. There is serious gross contamination. So some of these guys obviously are covered in mud or shavings. You know, it is still good to remove that gross contamination. And sometimes we do that with water and a garden hose with a small amount of pressure to remove any of the gross contamination. Another thing, nail punctures in the foot or wire is another fairly common equine injury. The first thing, obviously, try not to remove the nail, okay? I know it seems counterintuitive. Oftentimes, these horses aren't putting any weight on the leg, but you don't want to remove the nail, okay? Obviously, call your veterinarian. Try to describe what part of the foot that the nail seems to puncture. So does it puncture at the tip of the frog, at the heel, at the toe? This will help us determine how serious the injury is and recommend possible referral. Obviously, if any of the structures are punctured, that is a much more severe case. So epistaxis is defined as bleeding from the nostrils. Again, there's many different causes. More often than not in the horse, the most common is trauma. So they will hit their head, they get kicked in the head, and that's the most common things. But there are other more serious conditions that can cause this epistaxis. So generally, it's a lot easier to diagnose the problem when the bleeding's occurring. Okay, so if it is, you know, not associated with exercise or some other event that you know of, that there's visible trauma on the horse, I would call your veterinarian to examine the horse at the time while it still shows sign of bleeding. Keep the horse quiet, again, to try to decrease the blood pressure and decrease the amount of bleeding. And again, describe whether it's coming out one side, one nostril in particular, or both nostrils. And also describe whether it's frank blood or it's mixed with some mucus. And again, try to realistically quantitate the amount. And so some cases are very serious and life-threatening, and that's why not to be taken lightly, okay? And then respiratory distress. And obviously, horses have to breathe through their nostrils. So you want to observe for any increased effort, noise. Sometimes these horses will act distressed. Again, they may even exhibit signs of colic, throwing themselves on the ground. You know, they can be quite dramatic. Anytime there's severe swelling of the head, or even if the horse has just a case of hives, but they're starting to get worse, and if these hives are located around the horse's nose or face area, this is an emergency situation where you should call your veterinarian. Try to check the gum color and the air flow through both nostrils, as we described earlier, and try to keep the horse quiet and its head raised, as that will help, okay? Eye trauma is also definitely a big emergency in the horse. Most commonly, they'll exhibit signs of squinting, tearing. You might see some swelling around the eyelid or reluctance for the horse to open the eye, especially in the sunlight. Again, with any eye trauma, I would call your veterinarian immediately. Corneal ulcers can be devastating if left untreated or treated improperly. They can lead to loss of the eye, and these eyes can be very expensive to treat if not treated right from the start, and they're very labor intensive. And again, to save the horse's eye, it's a huge emergency. I wouldn't just treat any medication in the eye. I would do so under the direction of your veterinarian and have your veterinarian out immediately to look at the eye. The other thing is the eyelid structures themselves need to be intact. So if there is a laceration involving the eyelid, that needs to be established quickly again for the horse to have use of its eye and be able to blink and protect itself properly.
And you can hear the full recording of Dealing with Emergencies by visiting our Dressage on the Go section at eTrack. That's on the website at usdf.org. And finally, we have a couple of reminders for you. The 2017 competition year ends on September the 30th, so don't forget to check your scores at the usdfscores.com website. And if you notice an error, please contact the USDF Competitions Department. All score corrections must be reported to the USDF by October 15th, 2017, 5 p.m. Eastern. And if you believe you're qualified for the Regional Dressage Championships, you can check the status by going to the website to check the preliminary qualified horse rider list. That's at usdf.org. And you can verify there that you have qualified to compete at the Great American Insurance Group USDF Regional Dressage Championships. And finally, don't miss out on a USDF award. September 30th is also the deadline for submitting birth dates for the Vintage Cup, the Adult Amateur, and Junior Young Rider Awards. Declaring for Vintage Cup Awards, verifying Adult Amateur status, joining the USDF for the Adequan USDF Breeder of the Year Awards eligibility, and submitting online horse performance certification applications. Again, that deadline for those awards is September the 30th, 2017. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can download this podcast from the iTunes podcast store. Just look for USDF. Download it to your smartphone or any podcast app, and you can listen to the show on the go. For more educational resources and information, be sure to check out eTrack on the website at usdf.org. Be sure to follow us on social media to find out when the next episode of this podcast is available. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.